Welcome back to another T-Rex Talk. Today, I have, not in the studio, but remotely, good conversation with the guys, some of the guys from Open Source Defense. Open Source Defense is a lot of different things, but one of my favorite things is the email newsletter. It is my favorite email newsletter. It's definitely my favorite gun industry email newsletter. The articles that you guys have are fascinating and helpful, but you do a lot more than that. So we'll be covering some of that. So I would like my guests to introduce themselves just so I don't accidentally use a name that I'm not supposed to or confuse the audience as to who is who. So Chuck, if you would introduce yourself.
Sure. So I'm Chuck R. We'll go that far. And one of the co-founders of Open Source Defense since about 2018. I've had a long history in the tech world. I'm mainly a tech person. Had a really good career, starting with places like IBM Research, VMware, which started the cloud revolution back in the 90s. Early employee at Google, early employee at Facebook, and spent the last 11 years at Facebook before I left in 2018, working in big engineering projects in infrastructure, software infrastructure, but also worked for the last 2 years at Facebook trying to get some sanity into the firearms policy, both for advertising and content. So most of the action that you saw from 2018 onwards till about to present day are still kind of decisions and things I helped set up to some degree with policy and whatnot. And I still actively work with the NSSF, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, to help companies, firearm companies or outdoor companies in this space to keep their stuff up and running on social media, at least on Meta's platforms. I can still reach back and hopefully get some traction on issues people are having. My last job before I retired was at Anduril Industries, which is a defense products company founded by Palmer Luckey, a friend of mine from Facebook. When we acquired Oculus, the virtual reality headset, Palmer was the inventor, the founder of Oculus that was bought by Meta. And he started a startup down here in Southern California called Anduril Industries. And we were, or still are, inventing defense products to protect Western nations and Western ideals. And I can get more into that as needed. But that's kind of retired from that now. OSD is my main thing. That's a bit of my background.
That's a pretty fascinating resume. So Kareem, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
I'm Kareem Shaya. I, back in 2018, started Open Source Defense with Chuck and a few other folks. Also, been in the tech space for a long time, not as long as Chuck. We like to make fun of him as the old guy in the group. But yeah, started back almost 15 years ago at a couple different startups in New York, one of which was Warby Parker, the eyeglasses company, and worked on a couple different things in the tech space since then. And in fintech now. So definitely like see a lot of the stuff that folks in your space like to talk about with respect to like technology and gun stuff online.
Hmm. So I find, well, your content is fascinating and I think helpful. And not only do you write, I would say high level philosophical content about firearm rights, but you also are very user-friendly and open to brand new gun owners or people considering firearm ownership and have office hours where you talk directly to people. So you cover a real broad spectrum, and I really appreciate that, which is part of the reason I'm super excited to talk to you guys on the show. We've talked in the past in person, and it's really easy for those of us who are in the gun world to kind of get tunnel vision, especially if you're working in an actual company like T-Rex Arms. Real easy just to kind of put your nose to the grindstone, forget about other perspectives and develop blind spots. And you guys are coming from the tech world, which is one of the less gun-friendly spaces, I think I would say. Not the most unfriendly. I think teachers unions still might be the most most unfriendly.
Hollywood or, you know, take your pick. But yeah, there's worse places. Well,
yeah. Hollywood is deeply, deeply schizophrenic about guns because, yeah, they hate them, but they're going to be on every movie poster for the next as long as...
Man, they make good money, though. Holy cow.
Oh, man. I tell you what, Tommy Lee Jones and Glocks, everybody else with their Beretta 92s, iconic. But you guys come from kind of another world. And these two worlds need to come together. Gun companies, firearm and weapon companies in the past have been at the forefront of a lot of technology in past centuries. And technology companies of today are massively culturally important and powerful. And so there should be a lot more crossover, and there should be a lot more conversation between the two worlds. So I have just really appreciated our discussions in the past, the observations that you guys have had. And then, yeah, just some of your experiences are incredible. Both of you, not just Chuck. Chuck, it's obvious to point out, as the old man, you have been here from the very beginning of this phase of technology. And you're actually not that old. It actually kind of underscores just how much has happened in such a short amount of time. We have had insane, revolutionary, technological paradigm shifts in my lifetime. And you were there at the beginning of a whole bunch of those. So it's interesting how quickly things are going on.
It's a good point, Isaac. I don't want to boast here. I'll boast on behalf of these companies, but I don't think people or lay people or people who use technology even understand the undertaking it was to create the infrastructure, the compute power and infrastructure needed to produce things like Google and Amazon and Apple and Facebook and Instagram and all that. I like to make the comparison. It might seem silly, but it's like the modern day pyramids. It's completely feasible that future generations will look back at our arcane technology and our silicon-based, you know, compute systems and figure, like, how did these monkeys with thumbs manage to figure out how to build these worldwide networks that stayed up 99.999% of the time and had real-time communication with, like, wires and things, right?
Yeah.
Because it's nuts. And the tech stack that Amazon has developed with AWS, that Google with all their infrastructure and Facebook with all their infrastructure spans everything from hardware to software to networks to incredible complex software. So it's something to be proud of, and it's something that should be considered a good thing for humanity that we did build these systems, right? We're all focused on that like 1 millimeter of crust at the beginning, which is what we all interact with, which is a thing on Facebook that pisses us off, or some meme, or some, you know, Russian hacking and Chinese this and whatnot, and our own little groups. That's kind of just the surface that we all see, but what's behind it could really be leveraged for, you know, and that was the dream, and certainly at Facebook, you know, should be leveraged for the advancement and kind of a better future humanity. No, it's hard to kind of see that right now the way things are, but that was certainly the vision when we were doing these things.
Yeah, and I would second the technological achievement is worthy of note. And I believe that with a very few exceptions, technology is neutral. Servers are like firearms. They are double-edged swords. They can be used for good or for evil. They are in and of themselves neutral and available for empowering the people that actually use them. And so where things are right now, the people who wield that power, we could absolutely find fault with. But yeah, it is astonishing to me how far we've come. And yeah, I think the pyramids are a good comparison, because building a pile of rocks is not hard, and building a slightly larger pile of rocks is not hard. But when you go to Giza and you see acres and acres and acres of stone, it is truly mind-bending.
Absolutely.
And today we have basically taught magic sand to do math and show us videos and all of that. It's mind-blowing. I think one thing that gets a little bit lost sometimes, and you mentioned like the scale of these companies, Isaac, that Chuck can tell you war stories about this from Facebook. You know, often in the gun space, we attribute things to malice or indifference. Whereas the truth is a lot simpler, which is that gun stuff does not even pop up on the radar at a company the size of Facebook or Meta. We wrote in the newsletter a few months ago, if you just compare the scale of these companies, the biggest gun companies in the world are private, but Smith & Wesson and Ruger are publicly traded. Last I checked, their market cap was on the order of $1 billion, plus or minus a few hundred million. It takes Google, I think, 1 to 2 weeks to make that much in profit. So these are like entire companies whose entire value is dwarfed by 1 or 2 weeks of profit of a Google. And so like, it's very, very easy for a company like Google or like Facebook to make these decisions that, you know, seem maybe sensible to them or seem like they're managing their risks or doing what they're kind of being told from the people they speak to. And then in the process, without it even realizing it, just like steamroll entire industries.
Mm-hmm. In addition to that, I think that there's a level of complexity now where there are so many unintended consequences. And we can see this in a lot of different areas, like even in law. It is so easy for politicians who are on top of this huge mountain of bureaucracy and a couple of centuries of legal code. Like here in Tennessee, we have 2 million lines of legal code. So the unintended consequences of some of the bills that get passed just here in Tennessee, not even federal bills, which are thousands and thousands of pages long, but even just the little state bills that we pass here, people with really good intentions will want to do a thing and they'll write a bill, and lawyers will say to them, "You don't know what this bill will do. This is a terrible idea." And when I think about the scale of some of the stuff that's done at the top of a tech stack that is now really, really tall, like pyramid tall.
Yeah, this was the issue at Meta, you know, Facebook when I was there, and the same for YouTube and Twitter and whatever. These companies do not want to be in the business of creating another set of laws. You know, you have the federal law, state law. Now, increasingly in our lives, we have the policies of the acceptable use and or whatever you want to call them, but they're basically private policies that we have to adhere to in the public square. And this gets back to the argument of like, well, these are private companies and they can do what they want. Actually, if they were, they wouldn't be doing half the stuff they're doing as far as policing the things they are policing. So they are, you know, while I was at Facebook, I absolutely saw politicians, I mean, firsthand notes from politicians saying to Facebook, you need to, quote unquote, do something about X. And many times X, I saw, what's that horrible senator from New Jersey? His name sounds like Munchkin, but it's not actually.
You're going to have to narrow it down.
Yeah. There's only two of them. So it's, it's got one or the other. They're both probably terrible. But, you know, firsthand him saying like, you have to quote unquote, do something about, I think it was firearm. There might've been like a gun related ad on Facebook. Right. And you need to quote unquote, do something about this. Otherwise we're going to come and rain down on you in so many words. Right.
Yeah.
And Facebook doesn't want to spend, you know, certainly at that time, or at least what I saw, we don't want to spend time doing that. We want to build the product and make it better and do great things with the technology that we built. But now we have to spin up a whole team and a whole response. And because some crazy senator is like breathing down your neck, threatening you with some action if you don't, quote unquote, do something about some pet project that he just kind of fired off this dopey letter and goes on to the next thing. Right. So yeah, given, you know, kind of to, I don't want to be an apologist for the kind of abuse that we all suffer under the current social media regimes, but I will say my experience, at least quite firsthand, was that they don't want to be in this position. And as Kareem kind of alluded to, it's very rarely intent that's causing all our pain. It's really indifference and ignorance, because like they don't want to deal with the complexity of guns. It's like, if we all went away, it's fine. It doesn't matter to the bottom line. We're just kind of this annoyance. And there's like 10, 20 industries like this or interests or what have you that they would rather not worry about. So I just want to say out to the gun community that, you know, I see all the memes. I see all the Zuck things and all the memes about them being taken down. And they're always made out to seem so personal. Like of the 3 billion people on the platform, they looked at my stuff and somebody like Zuck himself specifically took down my stupid meme, right? And it's like, no, you're just like a grain of sand in literally billions of pieces of content that were created in the last 2 hours. And yeah, your little grain of sand got swept out to sea. No one cares. It was like the cold, heartless hand of automation or just ignorance.
It's that, like, it's the Don Draper, I don't think you think about you at all meme.
Right.
In real life. That's actually a lot of the motivation behind OSD is, I mean, I had this experience, Chuck had this experience taking over 1,000 Facebook employees over the years on offsites to the shooting range. So Mark Zuckerberg indirectly has actually paid for probably hundreds of thousands of rounds of ammunition without knowing it.
He knew it, kind of.
But like, I in downtown Manhattan at tech startups would, you know, be in like in the kitchen getting a coffee and have coworkers kind of like sidle up to me and be like, hey, I heard you like shooting. Like, can you take me to the range this weekend? So like our job as a group, as we see it, is to reach people like that, give them an entrance into this space where they feel like they have a place to start that is not scary, that's not intimidating, that doesn't have other baggage that they have to sign up for. And I mean, that's great just to spread gun rights and gun ownership. It's also great from a practical standpoint that at any company that is making decisions that have an influence on this space, you want somebody in the room who knows about this stuff. And the fact is, most of the time, that person just isn't in the room. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, the decisions are going to be missing really important context. Mm.
I didn't realize I was setting up this point when I talked about tunnel vision. But as you are, say, a tech company working on 3 billion user accounts and algorithms that will generate the most value for the company and engagement from those users, et cetera, it is really easy to look at teeny, tiny amounts of people. Like T-Rex Arms is a fairly large player on social media compared to other gun companies, and only compared to other gun companies. Compared to other industries, we are insignificant. And the gun company has developed similar blind spots where we tend to be focused on different stuff, and it's easier to ignore stuff that's happening in the tech world and just kind of disengage. I mean, that's personally my tendency. I love tech. I love gadgets. But right now, because I'm experimenting with Garmin devices, I just want to get a 1990s era GPS and go camping and not worry about what's going on in Silicon Valley. And one of the things that I would like to see happen at T-Rex is that we as a company get better rounded, not because we're, you know, a big enough company to really influence Silicon Valley per se, but so that we don't make similar mistakes, so that T-Rex Arms isn't a homogenous company where everyone only cares about one particular flavor of gun rights or gun advocacy or firearm, but we have people who have other interests and hobbies, so that there is someone in the room who knows about radios or agriculture or GPS devices or other stuff that's interesting and going on in the world that people should know about and think about when they make decisions. These kind of conversations that you set up with folks, both individually and as part of open source defense, I think is really good for getting rid of those blind spots, being more well-rounded, helping companies and people be more well-rounded as individuals and then as groups.
Yeah, I can't express enough that was the attraction, you know, to me for OSD. And part of our, you know, the big reasons for our success is that we are uniquely, in fact, I think the only kind of pro 2A advocacy group that is so adamant about walking the line of this neutrality of 100% gun rights, 0% culture war. You can look at our stuff. You can read everything that Kareem has produced in the newsletters that he puts out. And you will not find the word Republican or Democrat probably once, right? Mm-hmm. It is uniquely positioned that we can be attractive to both sides of this current kind of culture war and not have any dogma outside of the logical progression of why the Second Amendment, you know, is important, why gun ownership is normal, and why normal people own guns, and why, you know, how you can be a part of that. And it applies to you. It's not just bearded white guys. It's not just rednecks in Tennessee. It's for you, you coastal elites in San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, take your pick. Mm-hmm. By the way, I just rattled off probably 30 million people by mentioning those spots, right? Or just California is what, like 39 million people or whatever. That's our value. You know, our next steps are really to how to expand that to more, I would love to see us be a resource for more political people, but it presents a danger. The problem I always see is that the current kind of pro-gun politicians at pretty much every level, state, federal, and local, really have some outdated talking points that aren't necessarily wrong, but they're just the old NRA playbook from literally when I first got into this in the 80s, right? And I would love to be a a consultant or even behind the scenes, OSD to be behind the scenes to tell them like, okay, these are the modern interpretations and the modern statistics and the modern use cases of why we have ARs or pistols or suppressors or even, you know, full auto, whatever. So that is a great opportunity for us. The trick for us is to do it in such a way that if we, you know, we have to do it well behind the scenes, because once we start kind of exposing ourselves directly as kind of
friends with Thomas Massey, for example,
right, it's just immediately you've put your boat in one stream and then you're kind of stuck. So that's an interesting problem. I don't know if anybody's got thoughts about that.
Yeah, there's an article from a few days ago in the Reload talking about how there's a bunch of Texas Republicans who are actually very annoyed by the Supreme Court decision, the Bruin decision, because that's not their agenda. Their agenda isn't total gun rights. Their agenda was these specific talking points. So now they're under attack from both sides and their dander is up and they want to accomplish certain middle of the road things. And so it is, I think, really helpful that you guys talk about, I mean, you say that you don't want to be part of the culture war. I 100% get it. But you talk about deep foundational philosophical things that, you know, semantically speaking, I would say deeply cultural. They have tremendous cultural impact and influence. But you talk about core foundational stuff as opposed to just the talking points, the things that have become culturally ingrained in Republican versus Democrat, elephant versus donkey conversations for a while.
Yeah, I think so. One of the things we've said a lot internally is we want to be this late star codex of guns. And that's how we try to write. That's how we try to approach these issues. I think the reason for that is because there is sort of this, and this is changing very much with the rise of social media, because you no longer have to get your gun news, you know, either from three news channels on one hand, or on the other hand, like Fuddler out of like Soldier of Fortune magazine or something. Right. You can get like good, timely and like iterative news, right? Like cycles of what is considered good and then gets replaced by stuff that's even better. Those cycles are moving a lot faster. So our goal in how we approach this stuff is to give people who don't feel a particular attachment to any like political party or even necessarily an attachment to gun rights, give them a kind of a set of ideas or at least an approach that they can hang their hat on and say, like, I feel like I'm a smart person and I feel like I'm proud to be associated with this, or at the very least not ashamed to be associated with it. Right. I think for the longest time when you've talked a lot about like centralization versus decentralization. And I think that's a super important theme in all of this stuff. In this kind of old centralized model, it was very much the case that, like, to be a smart person, you had to think one way about these things. The set of things smart people were supposed to think about guns was very clear. And if you don't think those things, well, then, like, you're dumb or you're weird or whatever. And that's changing. And we try to write about it in a way that gives smart people or anybody the feeling that, like, hey, like, I can explore this without signing up for a bunch of other weird stuff that I'm not sure about.
Yeah. And I think that all of us are aware that changes really quickly. Cultural superficialities about what smart people are supposed to believe and dumb people are supposed to believe, like, that is a rapidly shifting set of rules. Like, I remember when not that long ago, to be a smart person, you had to be deeply, deeply suspicious of big pharma and bureaucrats who told you what to do with your body. And then it was like, oh no, that's yesterday. We're doing it differently this way. Not to get too into hot button issues, but, you know, tomorrow is going to be a different thing. The Prime Minister of New Zealand, I keep up with New Zealand news because I used to live in New Zealand and I'm technically still a citizen, dual citizen. But our Prime Minister, after really heavy duty COVID policies, just came out the other day and said, COVID is over. We won. Now we're working on something else. And it was like, just like that.
All's forgiven.
Can we do an AAR or, you know,
a little postmortem on that? Because it was a little bit crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So the changes happen really quickly. And I think that demonstrates a for lack of a better word, a lack of roots, a lack of foundational understanding. If you're up here at this crust level, the superficial level, it's really easy to change direction and change position. And there's some advantages to agility and nimbleness, obviously, but when you rapidly change something as foundational as some of these individual human rights, that's not something that should be rapidly changing from one day to the next.
Yeah, I think that's the big split between what I've seen kind of straddling both the red pill and the blue pill here, you know, in Silicon Valley and my many years there. There is a fundamental mindset difference. And this is interesting because it goes a little bit against the T-Rex Arms kind of mission statement. My experience, and I'm happy to have a discussion here if anybody thinks I'm wrong, but my discussion with folks more leaning left is that this gun thing may be a right. It doesn't carry a lot of weight, that even if it's declared a right or what the Supreme Court says. The mentality I find a lot is that they just don't think it can be handled by normal people. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a lot of topics, not just firearms, but kind of from my experience from people from a more left point of view, is that we can, like, humans are not capable of or shouldn't be trusted with, or, you know, without training or proper permitting or all these kind of caveats. Like, we, again, as these kind of monkeys roaming earth with bigger brains, that we cannot do these things. And certainly self-defense and firearms are squarely in the spot of, like, you can't just do that without
lot of individual power. Yeah.
Right. Without some sort of quote unquote training or vetting or whatever. Because the thing I always get when anti-gun people come up against me and at work at Facebook was like, well, you know, I'm not talking about you. You know, you're obviously trained and you're this and they're that. And I could be, you know, apparently I can have tactical nukes, you know, according to them, because I've passed some bar. Right. And so that mindset where T-Rex is like, anybody can be the citizen soldier, can be self-reliant, can be, you know, I think your thing was like, go out in the woods with an axe and rebuild civilization. Like, you have to understand, and you have to, at least, even if you believe all that, and you need to understand that, like, the other team is not at all on board. I mean, I don't get too specific here, but I know a lot of people from Europe. My wife is European, from Italy. And the idea of firearms ownership or even self-defense is very low. It's seen as like a very brutish and low class, low thinking kind of thing. We're here in the world of art and music and literature and beauty of the world and 2000 years of civilization. And you're like a freaking brute with a club thinking, who
going out in the woods with an axe.
Going out in the woods with an axe. Like, what is your freaking problem, right? So I don't think the gun side has enough sensitivity to the fact that the other team is not even in the same stadium as the rest of us, right? They're down the street at a Parisian cafe with their pinkies out drinking tea. And these are crude examples, and it's very wide generalization here. But
I think it's well put, though, because this is exactly kind of the issue, is that we, on our side, on the T-Rex side, we talk very bluntly as well. Because if you were to ask me, well, can everybody go into the woods and create civilization with an axe? I'd say, like, well, actually, no. But the good news is it's kind of a self-correcting problem. They get out there in the woods, and if they can't do it, then
there you go.
But we use very blunt general statements as well. And there's a better communication. I love what you guys are doing, going back to core foundational principles, because talking about what individual rights are, for example, or the way that certain types of technologies impact the market or have shaped civilization, without going straight to the everybody should have tactical nukes, you know, that's a great opener for
yeah, try not to open that.
For that's a fantastic start to a nuanced conversation, for sure.
It is the nature of technology, right, that it makes individuals powerful and potentially dangerous. I think that is the common thread for any technology. Guns, you've written and done a ton of videos about, like, guns 200 years ago were like a super interesting area of, like, startups and innovation. You know, if Y Combinator existed 200 years ago, gun companies would be in it. If you look at, like, a lot of the debates about social media and misinformation, in scare quotes, and that sort of thing, what that really is a disagreement about who should have access to powerful communication tools. There's even one of my favorite historical anecdotes around the time of the passage of the NFA. is shortly before that, there was a bill that never became law, but a bill to ban felons from owning cars. Cars were new, and there was this...
Oh, interesting, yeah.
There was a very correct observation that, like, cars make you super powerful. They let you come and go as you please. No one knows who you are. You can go to the next state before they know you've committed a crime.
Oh, absolutely. And
someone said, well, criminals shouldn't be allowed to own cars then, which today on the one hand seems ridiculous. But on the other, if you kind of accept this mindset of individuals cannot be trusted with, like, the kind of net result of individuals having powerful things is bad for everybody. If you accept that, then it totally makes sense within that worldview. So I think this is something that's a hot topic in guns, but very much not unique to guns.
Yeah. And I think that once again, you guys have really hit the nail on the head and gotten to a core foundational principle, which is, by what standard do we decide what individual rights are? And then whose job is that to make sure they play by the rules? So that is a really important one. And it in many ways, I would say guns are fascinating. Guns are a very cool, individual, decentralized, empowering equalizer, leveling the playing field. But the major changes that have happened have almost all been communication technologies. Like, one of the greatest shifts in the entire world happened when Gutenberg invented the printing press, or he made movable type really work, at the exact same moment that Martin Luther was writing some ideas. Like, I don't believe they ever met each other. That's one of the greatest partnerships of all time. Like, that makes Google look small. Now, everything that they accomplished took centuries. Everything Google has accomplished has happened really fast. And of course, there were people talking about, well, people shouldn't have printing presses. That conversation came up. Now, it happened so fast that in Europe, the cat was out of the bag. There was no way to unring that bell. There was not as much discussion about that as there was in the East, for example. But this is the core foundational discussion, is who's the boss, who says what the rules are, and then who actually forces people to follow them. When it comes to guns, cars, printing presses, or gigantic servers filled with everybody's data.
Yeah. I will say the only good news for firearms is that to get people over the hump of this kind of thinking of kind of what we're describing here, of for and against, is usually as easy as a trip to the range. And again, with our OSD range days, we've had a couple in Austin, we've had one up in San Jose and Silicon Valley. We get people, you know, don't even own guns, to come out and try it and get over that, you know, that unknown technology, that taboo thing. And it's amazing how quickly, first of all, they feel good because they're getting quote unquote instruction, which kind of checks that box for them as far as, like, you need to be validated somehow. So we have instructors. We're a number of us in OSD are certified instructors, one sort or another. So that, you know, checking that box and getting them on board gets them quickly over that hump. And then it's an easy, you know, then they're already on the path themselves to get to a better place, at least when it comes to thinking about the firearms. So we've done that through Zoom office hours, which we still will do for free. You can sign up on our website, or, you know, you need a gun buddy, or you know somebody who needs a gun buddy. And I think John from Filsters, you know, told us this once, but nobody goes to the anti-gun range, right?
Yes. Nobody, I love that quote. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has fun at the gun range. It's fun to go to the gun store. It's fun to go to the shooting range. It's no fun to go to the anti-gun store. So that has been, and Kareem alluded to the fact, I've taken over 1,000 Facebook employees over the course of a couple of years as official kind of corporate offsites to these shooting events. Out of literally 1,000 folks, I think there were three who were like, this is not for me. So 0.3% was like, this is not something for me. The vast majority had an interest, and a sizable percentage pursued it more. So I think that's on our side, and that's up to us in the gun community. You were talking about tunnel vision in the beginning, to lower our barriers, to have people who are the hardcore, you know, the Ben Stogers and the hardcore competitors and tacticals, and have them,
those guys, yes.
Yes. and also have a wider cadre of the baggage free, gatekeeping free people who are not afraid to onboard people gently and intelligently without, you know, without going, without bringing all that baggage. OSC certainly fits that bill. We're, you know, we're not small. We're too small to do it to people at the thousands right now, but that's on all of us to do that.
Well, I think you're a fantastic example. And I love that you're doing something different than T-Rex because, you know, T-Rex appeals to a certain type of person, a certain group that are more rugged individualists. I actually think just quietly on the podcast, which is public, so I guess not that quietly, I do think that we have erred on the rugged individualist kind of side. Now, I 100% agree that it's not the government's job to manage and control and regulate some of this stuff. But the goal isn't that every person by themselves goes out into the woods to rebuild civilization individually with an axe. That is not that's not how civilizations actually get built. Communities come together and work together, and the well-rounded skills of communities that come from people who have specialized, that really is something that bears fruit, and partnerships bear fruit. And so that is something that I think that we need to do a little bit better job of explaining. The goal is not that everybody be a lone wolf. The goal is that you work together. And hopefully people would see that, because T-Rex is not 80 lone wolves in a building. T-Rex is a company, and our success as a company is our teamwork. It really is nothing else. That's another thing that I really appreciate from you guys is your background in business and in growing teams. I have really appreciated some of your input. The stuff that we've been organized enough to implement has borne really good fruit in our dev team and elsewhere.
Can I ask you a question, Isaac, on your own podcast?
Oh, absolutely. This is a conversation. It's not exactly an interview.
Great. I'll turn the table. So I think like one really interesting thing you alluded to earlier is like business practices and how technology companies run and maybe how that should or shouldn't influence companies in the gun industry. T-Rex definitely seems to be run in a way that is different than a lot of kind of old line gun companies. And I think that's great. It's emblematic of kind of a new trend of gun companies, right? Like the companies that are starting today are just a fundamentally different breed than, you know, Uncle Mike's. What are the things you guys pay attention to in terms of business practices or things you're like ideas you're borrowing from other industries that you think have been important to making that difference for you?
That is an excellent question. I wouldn't say that we are smarter than other folks in the gun industry, but we just happen to be the right age that we grew up watching the growth of the tech bubble. And a lot of gun companies are run by guys who are my dad's age or my grandfather's age. And they have been doing this for a very long time. And they have built companies that work the old way really, really well. And it's just hard for them to make that transition. And one of the things that was really, I think, helpful for us is none of the officers came out of the gun world or the manufacturing world. So we came into it knowing that we knew nothing and trying to figure out like, well, what is lean manufacturing? What is this? What is that? How do you actually do same day or next day shipping? We know it's possible because Amazon's doing it. We know customers expect it because Amazon's doing it. So how do you do this thing? And sure enough, you know, if you do your research and you go to some trade shows and things, you find a lot of companies who are not necessarily pioneering, but you find a lot of companies who have spent the last 10 years honing some of these more modern practices. And a lot of companies are very, very open. We sent a number of people to Sweetwater a couple of years ago. Sweetwater has a fantastic customer service operation, a fantastic fulfillment operation. Being able to go and look at other companies outside of the industry, kind of regardless of who were really doing an excellent job that we wanted to emulate. For the most part, everybody has been tremendously, tremendously on board with bringing small companies in and saying, yeah, we had that issue too, and here's how we solved it. Yeah, don't worry about that so much. Here's what you actually want to do. And we are trying now with just a little bit of knowledge that we have of doing the same thing. Earlier this week, there was a local company that was having some issues with trying to figure out whether they wanted to build an in-house ERP or something off the shelf. And so my brother Noah and brother David just spent a lot of time talking through some of our conversations It wasn't like we figured it out, because we go back and forth on that question as we, you know, plan for the future. But I have actually been really encouraged and surprised at how open a lot of companies have been when we've said, because T-Rex does a lot of stuff. When we've said, hey, we want to ship product faster, how do you do that? Hey, we want to make product faster, how do you do that? Hey, we can't figure out what the deal is with this particular type of machining, how do you do that? And I wouldn't even say that we're reaching out to people who are really pushing the envelope, but people who are using readily available modern technology and winning with it.
I think you, full disclosure, Kareem and I did take an official OSD trip to Tennessee and visited Isaac and the team at T-Rex. And in the spirit of the startup experience that Kareem and I have with, honestly, again, not to boast, but some of the best companies in the world, whatever you think of Google and Amazon and Facebook and whatever, there is no denying that the technical structure and the organizational structure of those organizations allowed for incredible growth and scaling. Again, that has not been seen probably in industry, easily before. And we saw the spark of many of those kind of innovations and ideas at T-Rex. And we're excited by, you know, okay, there's companies in the firearm space and the outdoor space that can adopt this. Like the knowledge that we, people like Kareem and I, learned at these top companies can be used and leveraged so that we can scale and innovate smaller, you know, firearms companies, firearms related companies in the same way. I think Kareem and I are both very frustrated as technologists in seeing the pace of innovation and expansion and scaling in the firearms space and the firearms accessory space is just glacial. And it goes back to what you said, Isaac, as kind of older thinking, and that there's just a lot of feel like there's chains around us as far as what we can do. T-Rex certainly represents a way to get around that. And yeah, your hiring and your willingness to look at whatever crazy idea that Amazon does or Google does or whoever does and adopt it instead of seeing like, oh, they're just adversaries and hate us, is going to makes your company much more interesting. And I might think, you know, much more successful.
Well, and I would say that a lot of the change that are around the firearm industry, some of them are self-imposed, people who have set themselves up a certain way. Some of them are, I would say it is very difficult to find cutting edge developers, and design engineers who want to be in the firearm space for reasons that Kareem alluded to. And it's also just hard to kind of engage in the new economy. So we got banned from PayPal. And fortunately, we had a backup credit card processor. But if we had not already been a little bit paranoid, that would have been a very difficult, expensive experience for us. And it also would have been hard for customers who were like, why can't I check out for a week? So we have done things a painful, expensive way a lot of times because we've erred on the side of redundancy. And then it turns out that it wasn't actually an error. It was a necessary expense. And that is very daunting for other people. And I would say legitimately so. You need to kind of count the cost. We've seen people get kicked off of Shopify. We've seen people get kicked off of Salesforce. Part of the reason that we are building more of our stuff in-house is because we've been deplatformed a few times. And so I can see how a lot of guys who are older and in the firearm committee, and they're like, look, we sell guns direct to brick and mortar gun stores. Trying to decide whether or not we should be on Shopify just does not appeal to people who already have their working model. And they realize that that model is shrinking, but the risk of embarking on an entirely new foreign operation, I totally understand the hesitation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you are going to take some lumps. I mean, the fact that you decided to do a company in the firearm space absolutely means you're going to have some persecution that you need to get past, right?
Oh, yeah.
But that is not, you know, but especially now as technology keeps moving forward, there's more, you know, life finds a way always.
Oh, yeah. And I want to say, like, I will complain about Zuckerberg and the manipulation of social media platforms with the best of them. But to be fair, and we really should be fair, in the same way that T-Rex Arms is not one person, but it is all of the team members, T-Rex Arms would also not exist without Instagram or YouTube. Like,
exactly.
There is no way that we would have gone from one person to three people to 10 people without Instagram. And YouTube right now is such a huge percentage of our marketing that as problematic as a lot of the unintended consequences, ignorant policies, et cetera, that I think are going to have long-term destructive effects to those companies and potentially to society at large. There are opportunities to be had on those platforms that are unbelievable. And T-Rex can prove that because we have done a terrible job of diversifying when it comes to marketing and advertising. We are still using those platforms, and I have to give credit where it's due for sure.
Actually, that's a mind if I plug something here, Isaac, but I'll give you a heads up. I'm going to contact you offline. Kareem and I had a really great conversation with someone. The greater point to people listening is that, yeah, there are companies that want this opportunity, that see the need for advertising networks and advertising platforms for firearms. I invested in an advisor to a company. I think it was also talked to you guys and talked to Noah, that's doing hosting services in such a way.
Yes.
So you're not directly tied to AWS or Google Cloud services or whatnot. They provide a layer of abstraction that kind of prevents it, so you can't be taken down as easily, because you're abstracted away from running on these cloud platforms. So deplatforming becomes less of an issue, right? So their needs are just building by daily. It's not just firearm space. The good news with like social media, like going off the rails and banning everyone left and right, is that it's going to plant a million seeds of a million startups who are going to try to solve that problem, because there's money to be made, and there's people who feel strongly the other way. So I'm optimistic in that regard.
Yeah, and I think that if you look back at history, this is a pretty common pattern. Like when people discovered that whale oil was great for lighting homes, that was I don't know the exact time frame, but that was one of those great technologies. So much better than candles, so much more convenient. Like, it was a very disruptive technology. And then there was a time when whale oil was disrupted by other technologies. And so the life cycle of some of these technological developments and the way that they empower and the way that they harm, it really does, in my opinion, ebb and flow. What is nice, I'm a big believer in the free market. When the free market is allowed for people to say, hey, I'd like to stop buying whale oil, as opposed to the government saying, we got to preserve our whaling industry by subsidizing this and putting some tariffs on this crazy out of control Edison character. And whatever we do, don't let Edison buy Twitter. You know, this.
Yeah.
I think that people see the dangers faster and solutions to the dangers get implemented faster. And the market is still free enough that it is very powerful, and it's actually shocking to me how our economy, as belabored as it is supporting so many parasites, and it's still just, it can support so many parasites. That's how good it actually is.
It's true.
I think, so we're big believers in that, like in the gun space, we spend a lot of time. We spend, people spend 90% of their time talking about politics and 10% talking about products. And we are big believers that that needs to be reversed. So the laws could be whatever you want, the dream set of laws. If the products and the companies are not there, people will have nothing good to buy, and they're not going to get into this stuff no matter what the laws are. So like we've been looking to do some angel investing in this space and see what can we do to make more companies start in this space, so that, some ambitious new grad, instead of going to, take like a high paid job programming somewhere or at a bank or whatever, like what would make that person start a company in this space? And the really interesting thing, we've talked to people from, tiny side jobs making $100,000 a year in revenue or less, all the way up to people running like companies doing close to $100 million in revenue. And the funny thing is, all of them have the same complaint. We ask them like, what would it take to make 10 more of you get started? And it's not money. It's not even as like, they do complain about deplatforming sometimes, but it's not even really that. It's really just knowledge. We hear things like, hey, like I'm running a multi-million dollar business and I have no idea what my profit margins are supposed to be, my click-through rates are supposed to be. How do I set up this manufacturing thing? What does good marketing look like? If you are, a tech company, you're coming out of Y Combinator, whatever, there is like a huge, really well-developed ecosystem of people who help you out. If you want to hire someone, whatever job you need to hire someone for, there's some amazing person who did that for like 10 million users at three companies in a row, and they know the drill. Whatever you need, there is a network of people where you can pick up the phone and get advice. That is why the tech industry works. That's what makes the whole thing tick. That's why these companies are able to be successful and make a ton of money, which in turn helps them attract great people. Very little of that exists in anywhere near the same level of maturity in the gun space. Not because smart people aren't going into it, but just because they don't have the kind of established mechanisms to learn from each other. Mm. And I think like social media is starting to change that. Podcasts like this are starting to change that, but it's really in its infancy.
Yeah, we still have a lot of blind spots. I think that's clear. Of course, there's a difference between knowing that you have blind spots and knowing where they are and how to check them. So hopefully that's the next step for us. Well, it's fascinating. I don't want to take too much of y'all's time, but I feel like there's a whole other conversation, which is kind of the next step of technology. One of our guys was recently at a big Airsoft Milsim event in Pennsylvania, and he said 40% of the players had night vision. Wow. So there's an increase in interest in night vision, in thermal, in not just Baofeng radios, but relatively advanced radio stuff. So there's a tech aspect to this world, even outside of running the businesses, that would be fascinating to delve into. And I know, especially you, Chuck, have recently been adjacent to that world, if not neck deep in it.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. And glad to talk about that for a second. It's interesting. You probably know more about the night vision world than me, but my understanding is, man, that is ripe for disruption. There's effectively one technology producer right now, right? One or two. And it was all born out of obviously military-centric use cases. But as soon as somebody gets the idea of like, I don't know legally how it can be leveraged with patents and whatever, but to let that loose, you know, in the wider consumer market, it's going to go pretty fast because the prices will drop, accessibility go crazy, both for thermal and for kind of light amplification. And that's
right.
I feel
like we're right on the cusp. Yeah. And a lot of the pieces are being developed by other people. Oculus really got the ball rolling with virtual reality headsets. And that is the display technology that you want part of your night vision goggle to be. You know, that is a more mature, mass produced technology. There's off the shelf parts for that now. Thermal imagery is much more mature and much being used much wider and mass produced right now. The cameras themselves, the light amplification side, the sensitivity of the cameras is limited. It really does not compare with the analog tubes. But if you have a relatively sensitive camera and you combine it with a thermal imager and you put it in front of a very affordable high-res virtual reality display that you can get off the shelf, you have a pretty fantastic value proposition there. There's certain things that it can't do, but then there's a whole bunch of things that it can do. The research is being done, and it just doesn't exist in a product for the consumer space. And somebody's going to invent something. We're going to get a little bit better this or a little bit better that, and it's just going to push it over the edge, and it'll be a cascade.
It's like it was with UAVs, right? With UAS, yeah. UAVs, drones. And you kind of alluded to this, but my experience at Anduril is exactly this. You know, we built that company pretty much off the shelf. It's using a lot of off the shelf hardware to do very critical military missions. And we, you know, the hard part is certainly the software that we do and enhance and the AI and the ML and the secure network that underlies it. But the company's idea was like, we're not going to be a defense contractor. We're going to be a defense products company. We're going to take a Silicon Valley style of solving a problem and apply it and make things the military is going to want to buy from us. And that's what they did. And the first products, two products at Anduril was a sensor tower that took all sorts of existing radar and LIDAR and optical thermal and other technologies into one package on a tower that would spin and scan any sort of perimeter you need to protect, be it the southern border where they're deployed now or a base perimeter, both downrange in hot zones and continental U.S. Sensitive areas, and then build an AI network that only alerts the operator when there's an event of note. So no more spider webs and birds and cows going across your field of vision. It's like humans and cars and trucks and things like that, right? Then we invented a UA, you know, the fancy way to say drone is UAS, unmanned aerial system, yeah, or unmanned aerial vehicle. So develop a UAS system that can automatically deploy from that tower to investigate, track that asset until the operator decides what to do. So now we built a very capable helicopter as a UAS that can fly for hours, lift heavy loads, do search and rescue, drop, you know, search and rescue materials to lost people, and a whole host of other missions, right? And that was all privately done with current technology to solve needs that it would take, you know, the big prime contractors billions of dollars and years to do. We did it in 6 months. I don't want to go on like this. I'm sorry. This is turning into a plug.
This is fascinating. I did a podcast a while back, just kind of exploring this idea of how quickly we used to invent stuff militarily during World War II, and then how long it takes us now with the big defense
contractors. Yeah, the primes are just not, it kind of goes to exactly what we're talking about with the firearms industry, right? The primes are these old fossilized organizations of literally tens, if not, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who just can't make a move. And each project is $1 billion or more. One of our most successful things at Anduril was a drone interceptor, because the military came to us and like, you know, this is great having our own drones, but the number one thing we're getting is harassed by DJI drones out in the desert, because the bad guys can go to the local Walmart equivalent and get a DJI or some other knockoff drone, fly it over our bases, get reconnaissance, or worse, just harass us with dropping grenades, right? Mm-hmm. So we need a countermeasure. And you've seen those electronic ones, and those don't really work well, honestly. So we developed a drone interceptor in like 6 months for a trial, you know, out here in Southern California. And in 6 months, we had a AI-based self-guiding drone, anti-drone. So it just launched itself up. It searched the skies after the tower. It worked in conjunction with the tower, the sensor tower. And it said, okay, there's something that I don't recognize, not a bird, not a plane. And the operator would see it, and the operator would take action, say, yes, take that down. And it was as simple as, you know, okay, now what do you do? Well, we figured, what's the simplest thing? We'll run into it. So, you know, drones are very fragile when they're in the air. So our drone interceptor simply locks onto it and rams it as a single-use device. And that costs many thousands and thousands of dollars less than other aerial anti-drone technologies by the big contractors, right? So that is a very real example of an industry and what can be done, again, with that kind of quote-unquote Silicon Valley approach to faster, better, cheaper in an area that hadn't seen that kind of innovation, into, like you said, in many, many years.
I don't know what you could bring that cost down to, but I guarantee there's airsofters that you could sell that to today. So it's an additional market opportunity.
Actually, you'd appreciate this, Isaac. The biggest cost for those interceptors was the frickin' Silvus, right? Silvus is the gold standard for communications, for reliable kind of hard dynamic communications. And that thing costs thousands of dollars. And we're putting it in devices that are guaranteed to go break. Like you're going to ram it into another thing, right? So if we could, and the problem is there's no alternative to Silvus, right? Just like there's no alternative to FLIR in many cases for the thermal imaging. So that's you'll appreciate that, because that's a radio, that's the radio for the UAVs. And there needs to be
looking at them, and they're so nice. There needs, yeah. Great. Well, this is the thing. When there is something that is as dispensable as a FLIR camera or as a Silvus radio, that is a little bit of a crimp on future development, but it's also a great big flag that
huge
says
opportunity.
Somebody invent another one of these things.
Yeah, like something that doesn't need to be as robust as a Silvus, because it's going to be more disposable or in a lower cost device.
Yeah, well, we should also talk about that in an offline conversation. the opportunities here are, I think, significant. I really appreciate guys like you who have the experience to really know how to capitalize on those things and are able to come alongside other folks and be like, hey, here's a blind spot that you're missing, this great big green opportunity light that's just right here in your blind spot. Can I just, you know, help you out here? And the fact that you're doing that with companies, but also with individuals where you're saying, hey, here's a blind spot. Can I take you to the range? Like you're missing an issue about this firearm conversation. Why don't you come to the range and just see around this corner for a second? That I think is a tremendous example. And I really appreciate you guys a lot for your work there.
Right on. And thank you. Obviously you guys with your work at T-Rex and the stuff that Lucas does, you know, we don't have to go into it. You've talked about it a million times, but you know, Lucas is a game changer as far as that younger crowd coming off of gaming, coming off of airsoft, like giving them an on-ramp, because again, we all know this, it's quite real. It's, you know, the media onslaught on guns is a instant negative, like not even a consideration that there would be anything positive about gun ownership as a media de facto fact standard, never going to change. That's our biggest obstacle right now, is that we have no ability to counter that, those arguments that you've seen in every ridiculous political speech or every ridiculous article, you know, from New York Times and down to whatever and this MSNBC. There's nothing, you know, it's so hard to counter that stuff. And this kind of one of the last points, you know, I wanted to make was that you guys are kind of leading this way or pointing in this direction, but we desperately need, how do I say this politely? We desperately need a better influencers, more influential people, more quote unquote important people, you know, who might live in the coastal elite areas of those places I mentioned earlier, right? There's no major CEO or C-suite executive or someone of stature of you know, that's considered traditional stature that is speaking up for us. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of pro-gun people in those levels. I've talked to some of them, and I have access to a couple of them, but they are not in a position or even not informed enough or not passionate enough or don't want to go down that path, understandably. So that always worries me that we just don't have spokespeople that are going to be able to give us that better image against this media onslaught, a media engine that is completely bought and paid for by people who are actively just don't like guns, think they're low, think they're archaic things that our civilized society needs to leave behind. And, you know, we're at a disadvantage there.
Mm. Well, there's a lot of work to be done. And I think you guys have more traction in that area. So I'm grateful to you guys. And I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us publicly. For everyone who's listening that is not subscribed to the Open Source Defense newsletter, go get subscribed. It's definitely good content. And be thinking about ways that you can contribute to this larger mission that I think we're all a part of. So thanks once again. And man, I want to have you guys back for a future episode. So podcast listeners, stay tuned. Feel like there's a whole bunch more cans of worms that just barely scratched the surface of tonight. So that'll be fun.